This is the 9/11 and other Deep State Times teleconference for 27th of December 2017. Ken Freeland facilitating. Cheryl, are you here?
Working.
I'm just a little sole facilitator here. And Craig McKee, secretary. You want to call the roll, Craig?
Sure. I'm just So based on what I've heard and what I have on the website here, I have Neil Marquis, Ken Freeland, Gerald Pechnek, Kelly David, Ryan Hess, Mike Cook, Dan Hennen, Craig McKee, Andy Steele, Doug McKenzie, Peter Ketchum, and there's a 416 on here. Is that Barry?
That should be John O'Neill. 416792.
Oh, you're in Toronto. Of course, I forgot that. Okay, right. Right, okay. Yeah. So, and Wayne Costi also is now on. So I'll add that. So that's who I have so far. There's one here that's listed as wireless caller, starting with 83-something.
831.
Yeah, that's me.
Who's
that's
that?
Me, Doug McKenzie.
Oh, that's Doug. Okay, so that...
This is Cheryl. I just joined also.
Oh, okay, great. So did I miss anyone? Or do I need to do it again?
Anybody not hear their name mentioned? If not, then we'll take that for the roll and proceed to look at the minutes as distributed by Craig for the previous November meeting. Any objections to approving the minutes as distributed? Hearing none, then we'll take those minutes for approved and move on to talk about tonight's agenda as distributed in draft form by me. Any amendments to the draft agenda? Well, hearing them there, then we will go ahead and adopt it for use tonight. And our first item on the agenda is our feature presentation for tonight, and that would be the discussion of the Bob McIlvaine Act. And Andy Steele is no stranger to our teleconference. He's been on before whenever there's an issue involving, sometimes when there's been an issue involving AE 9/11 Truth. So one of their spokesmen. And I think also, Andy, don't you have a 9/11 related podcast still going or not?
Yep, we have one once a week, 9/11 Free Fall.
So you could plug that while you're here. Get some folks interested.
Yeah, 911freefall.com.
I'll give the floor to Andy to tell us about the Bob McIlvaine Act and what we can do to help promote it. Go ahead, Andy. Welcome.
All right. Great. Thank you, everybody. And I have some notes here of things I just wanted to hit. I don't know how long it'll take me, but hopefully I can get through them to address all the stuff, and then I'll be happy to answer any questions for the remaining time that I have. So as a lot of you probably already know, if you follow AE 9/11 Truth, in September, we unveiled the Bobby McIlvaine World Trade Center Investigation Act. That's the full name for it. It's named after Bob McIlvaine's son, who's probably no stranger to anyone in the 9/11 Truth Movement, Bob himself. His son, Bobby, was tragically killed at the age of 26 when he was entering the North Tower. Bob talked to the coroner, and the coroner told him it was an explosion that went off. The act is draft legislation, so it would impanel a select committee in either chamber of Congress to reinvestigate the destruction of the three World Trade Center towers on that day. So it would be the new investigation that AE 9/11 Truth has been asking for. And the great thing about it is that, you know, it just takes one house of the Congress to pass it. Once it passes, it goes forward. Not even the president himself can stop it the way that it's handled in the way that it's written. There is precedent for this kind of legislation, such as the House Select Committee on Assassinations and the Church Committee. I'm sure that a lot of people are aware of those. If not, you can certainly look them up. Some interesting things were revealed during those investigations. I believe even in the one on assassinations, it came out that John F. Kennedy was likely killed by a conspiracy. I don't remember the exact wording of it, but it was some truth coming out and some acknowledgement of that. So, again, it's not without precedent. And we're going to approach the strategy because I kind of alluded to this earlier. We've been asking for a new investigation for years, and we've sent a lot of activists to congressional offices saying we want a new investigation. But in this case, we've already done most of the work now for the congressman in establishing one, so we don't have to rely on them to draw it up and impanel their own staffers to make it. We just got to simply hand it to them and say, will you sponsor this? Can you get behind it? And we'll get into some of the reactions that we've been getting so far in just a few minutes. But also, this provides more specific ask for activists. You know, when you go into some kind of negotiation, you want to be asking for a specific thing, not just, you know, we want to educate you about this and go forward and know it, but, you know, we want you to do specific action for us. Hopefully the promise would be then that we'll go away because 9/11 have been acknowledged and we can all stop doing it, because this is what we've been looking for a long time. So you'll have a specific thing you can ask for. And it also puts a face on the issue and identifies the goal with a well-known victim and with his father, too, Bob McElvain. I mentioned this before, you know, the nature of how Bobby died puts the official story in question itself because he was killed by an explosion as he was entering the lobby of the North Tower that day. So right there you have a story to open up with when you do outreach about when you tell them about Bobby, who he is. His face is right on the papers that we've prepared that have the legislation written on it. And that's how I go about it when I talk to congressmen. I was like, this is Bobby McElvain. He was 26. He was killed by an explosion as he was entering the North Tower, and go into all the rest of it. So it provides a great opening for people. And it's really hard to say no to a 9/11 victim's father in this case. If you're somebody that doesn't have a personal connection to it, it's easier for them to say, oh, you know, go away. You're just some crazy conspiracy theorist. Not so easy when it's Bob McElvain, and when you have his son who died that day. So that's why we're pursuing this strategy, and a lot of our outreach and activism is going to be based around it. And we started on September 11th. As a lot of you may know, we had a press conference at the National Press Club that day, and we distributed the act to every member of Congress's office, that's the Senate and the House. We did it over about 3 days. Since then, we've had supporters scheduling appointments with their members of Congress, some with more success than others. Some members are willing to meet with them, others aren't. So, but they're going to get the act delivered to them anyway. We're not going to give up on them. We're going to keep on bothering them until they at least meet a constituent or have some kind of discussion or acknowledge this in some way. Let's see. We've also had many people generate emails to their members of Congress. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but we had a really lot of people who generated a letter to their particular congressional representative through an online form that we have, where all you got to do is type in your zip code, your address, and it will generate a letter in that person's name automatically to whoever the representatives are, the two senator and the congressman, and knows that by putting the address on. And I don't remember the numbers, but it was a lot of people.
Let me interrupt you right there. Can you send us the link for that online letter so that we can include it in the minutes and ask all of our people on our rookie list to participate?
Yeah, I was going to throw out the webpage here, but it's AE911truth.org/justice.
Oh, that's pretty simple.
Yeah, pretty simple to remember. So, yeah, that's the webpage, so it's an easy one to remember as well. And again, the letter's already written for you. And so, guys, you know, if you've already done it, you can get your friends to do it. If you get somebody to say, hey, you know, it does look like a controlled demolition, I'm for a new investigation. Even if they don't want to go all the way and, you know, think that it's an inside job or something like that, they say it's weird and should be investigated again, say, hey, you know, that's all we're asking for. Why don't you just put your address in here and send this letter to your representative? And they do take tallies of these, how many people are commenting on a specific issue. Even if they don't read the text of every single letter or if it's the same letter again, they do take numbers on it. So we're going to be moving forward in the new year, after the new year, we're going to have phone campaigns that targeted members of Congress and the Senate. It's going to sort of run like the C-SPAN campaign did a few years ago. If you're not familiar with that, we had supporters. We would contact supporters and have them call into this morning show where congressmen were on the show and ask them questions about Building 7. It was a lot of fun because they gave some very funny answers. And that worked out very well. So we're going to be reaching out to our supporters and having them call their congressmen's offices and telling whoever answers there, most likely the staffer, why they support the Bobby McElvain Act. And we've attended some seminars, and this is what the people say that they respond to the most, and they give some very good examples. They give an example of a certain kind of legislation. I think it might have been the SOPA legislation that was tabled. And because a lot of people called in, and congressmen took note of those phone calls. And we're also going to be taking our outreach about the act to the street by making available to our supporters these palm cards that we designed. They're basically like, they're not brochures in the traditional sense. They're kind of like bumper sticker size, but they have information on them. And this was out in a bulletin about last week discussing this, along with a video that we put out. But you can make a donation and get some glossy ones, or if you don't want to make a donation, you can download it for free, the PDF of it, print it out yourself. There's two to a page, and those are going to be available. I believe those are going to be available on the website as well. But if anybody asks me, I can just send you the PDF of it too. And that way, street activists can just, whenever they feel like it, get together and say, hey, we want to print these out. I'll print out 100 sheets of it. That'll be 200 brochures. I'll spend Saturday handing out stuff about the Bobby McElvain Act at wherever, the state fair, whatever event, or on the street. And that is actually something anybody can do without, we do want to hear about what people are doing to know what's going on out there, but you don't even have to really report to headquarters. You can just hand those out whenever you feel like it. So that's a resource that is now available. And, of course, we're going to need the help of our supporters to make this stuff happen, because nobody does anything they'd rather not do unless they're afraid of something else. And in this case, it's fear of not getting elected again, fear of kind of public embarrassment, fear of having to have this issue come up over and over again. So what the 9/11 Truth Movement is going to have to do is keep this issue alive, keep it coming up over and over again. And you can't just give up because the congressman might dismiss you one time or two times when you go to them. And we did this on C-SPAN. We did this for like a year and a half before they kind of surrendered and let Richard on. So we're going to have to be just tenacious. We're going to have to use the materials that are becoming available and keep our focus on the Bobby McElvain Act. And again, as I said at the beginning of my talk here, we're going to have, focus it on this person, focus it on this legislation, because it is a pathway to a new investigation if it gets passed. If it gets passed, then we got to worry about what they do with the investigation, but that would be a problem that I would love to have. So we're going to need all your help with that and with all of our efforts. So if anybody wants to help out AE911truth.org, you can contact me. I'll give out my email in just a minute. If you want to get involved in specific things, if you want to just kind of do stuff on your own and don't have a lot of time to get coordinated with AE, you can go to AE911truth.org/justice. There you can send out the email. You can download some materials, which includes the act, a letter from Richard Gage, a letter from Bob McElvain, and call your congressman and make an appointment. And just let us know how it went so we know who's been talked to and what was said. But you can print out that stuff right there and hand it to them. There's all sorts of things that you can do in support of this act, and we're going to be asking a lot of people to help us. So I don't want to rush through this, but I want to give people the chance to ask me any questions that they might have. So I'm going to continue talking and open the floor to questions.
Okay, that being the case, let's go into Q&A mode. I think it'd be the simplest way to do this. One moment, please. Huh. I do not see Q&A mode. Oh, there it is. Okay, one moment here. I have to unmute Andy, and I have to unmute Kelly. Okay. So if you'd like to ask a question, star 6 on your phone will put you in the queue, and Wayne Kosky is already ready with a question. Go ahead, Wayne.
Yes, Andy. Thanks for the update. I thought in the beginning you said you were going to give us a rundown on what some of the members of Congress have, that you've talked to have said, and I'd like to hear that part. So if you could, I'd
like
to hear that. Thanks. Over.
Sure. I can start with my own congressman's office. I didn't speak to the congressman himself. However, I did speak to the staffer, and he seemed particularly interested in the Building 7 study that's going to be coming out and wanted further communication after that study is released. Let's see. There is another person. Oh, Bob McElveen's member of Congress, and I apologize. I think his name is Brendan Boyle, if that is correct. And I guess he was very receptive when Richard and Ted met with him. And we've had other reports, too, of people. Stan Beatty in Michigan, his member of Congress eludes me the name of him at this moment, but I guess that was a very positive response. And there is a congressman who I can't say right now, but we have a volunteer that knows him personally and has kept an open mind about this. So we've had that success. We've had some congressmen refusing to meet with constituents. That's happened. I'm sure Mike doesn't care if I mention that. He's been having an issue trying to get in there. So it's really touch and go, and it really just depends on the personality of the congressman, which trickles down to his staff. So that's basically where we're at this point.
And when is the release date expected from the Alaska study?
Kelly, when was the release date on that?
The first draft report is supposed to be released in the end of January. And mm-hmm. then it's going to go through a peer review process. So the final will probably be finished, we're guessing, around April or May.
Thank you, Kelly. Okay.
You're welcome.
Okay. All right. I guess that answered Rains and my question. So let's go to Gerald Pichinet. Go ahead, Gerald. Gerald Pichinet? Gerald, you are up.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. The question has to do with the question of information about 9/11, which would presumably include everything about Building 7 as well as everything else, that may be classified at this point. And I'm saying this because there was introduced December 13th, just recently, 2017, H. Res. 663 by Walter Jones, Steve Lynch, and Thomas Massey. That is the same three congressmen who were involved with the declassification of the 28 pages, which from the original Senate report. So my question is this something that you could approach Walter Jones, Steve Lynch, and Thomas Massey on? Because this seems to be probably lots of stuff is still classified about what you're referring to about Building 7.
All right. Let me just clarify. So when you say is this, do you mean the development you cited just now or the Bobby McElveen Act?
The Bobby McElveen Act that you're putting forward.
Yeah, well, first of all, I would say approach every congressman with it, even if you think that he's going to not be receptive. If he's your congressman, then that's the one you're stuck with until you vote in a new one and work on him. But yeah, I mean, I would cite that, you know, if this is a congressman that supported some kind of legislation that you think would be friendly to the truth community, You know, we don't like to, we don't want to have outside issues like mixed in with AE, but if you want to cite that as something to say, hey, look, you know, you declassified the 28 pages, that's good, but look at what the architects and engineers are unearthing, and they got this act, I would recommend it. Because you know, if they're cool on one thing that's friendly to the truth community, then it's a good instinct to think that they might be more open-minded on this.
Yep. Okay.
All right, thank you. Next is Michael Cook. Michael, go ahead.
Hey, thanks a lot. Yeah, Thomas Massey is my congressman, and I did meet with him at a public appearance. He was doing this really cool thing, coffee with your congressman, and a whole bunch of people show up at a coffee house, and I didn't, you know, try to put him on the spot or anything. I was actually the last one in the line to just hand him a packet of stuff. And so far, Andy's just been trying to deal with it. Maybe it'd make a difference if I, you know, made an attempt. I don't know. I'm the constituent. I was letting AE handle it, but we've been kind of stonewalled so far. It is really encouraging that he supported the 28 pages. And I don't know. All we can do is just keep trying. I think this is a great, great tactic, a great strategy, and I hope we can get a lot of folks involved. Thanks.
Yeah, and let me make a comment on that. I think it is best if the constituent makes their own appointment. You know, in the very beginning, I was trying to make it for volunteers, but then we found that having them do it themselves instead of saying, hey, I'm representing Mike here, just have, you know, Mike do it. Is probably the better way to do it. The thing is that, like, for this to be successful, people have to do it. And we want to make sure that people do it and that they have everything that they need and bring in the papers and stuff. So that's really going to be the key to this. I think it's a great idea, but we're going to need the inertia and the people willing to go to the offices to have these discussions and do what's necessary. Even if they think their congressman is just going to ignore it, you still got to do that. So really the success of the 9/11 truth movement isn't even going to hinge on this particular idea. It's just going to, hinge on the ambition and inertia of the members of the movement itself. So I always say on my shows, you know, if you're going to succeed at anything, you got to just do something small every single day. That's how wars are won. And this is something small, a bunch of little small things that people can do, you know, within a span of a few months to do their part. So we're asking people to, you know, take that initiative, make those phone calls, let us know how the conversations went so we have some intel on what's being said out there so that we can proceed. But, you know, anybody can do this, you know, regardless of whether I send the email for you or not. So that's my comment on that.
Kido? Let's see if anybody else is in the queue. Nope. Looks like that was our last question. So we want to thank Andy and Kelly for stopping by and giving us the lowdown on this. And is there any objection to our making a unanimous recommendation that people follow up by going to the 9/11 Truth or 9/11 Truth website and sending a letter to their congressman? Any objections to our making that a unanimous recommendation? We're hearing none. That's how we'll write it up in the minutes. We'll ask everyone to go to that page and send their own individual letter at least, and also do whatever else they feel called to do to help participate in this important campaign, okay? Thanks again to both of you.
Thanks.
Okay.
Thank you.
So that brings us to our next agenda item. That would be Brian Hess, and here to refresh a memory of Brian for those who possibly weren't here the first time when Ryan introduced us to his topic. Cheryl, go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah, thanks. As Ken just said, Ryan has joined us on the show before to talk about he's creating a museum of conspiracy, and I believe it's going to be in New York City was the plan. And now, in addition to that, he's planning some kind of a big event And so he's here tonight to update us on the museum and to tell us about this big event. And I see that the website name has changed from museumofconspiracy.com to conspiracycenter.com. So, Ryan, maybe you can address that, you know, why you made that change also. So welcome, and thanks for being here. Oh, is Ryan muted?
Oh, I'm sorry. We have to go back. We have to get Ryan back. We have to get Ryan off of... Let's see. We will find him in just a second.
I got him. I got him here. Okay. Yeah. Ryan, are you with us?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Thanks, Cheryl. And I apologize. I didn't get you a bio any sooner. I just didn't have anything drafted up. But thank you so much for having me, guys. Yeah. So I guess I can start with the first item, and I guess that's why the change from the Museum of Conspiracy to the Conspiracy Center. And I could go honestly on for hours and hours, but long story short, it's basically just the state of New York is one of few states that has restricted words that can't be used unless you get prior approval. So I've spent about, I'd say about 10 to 15 grand with legal fees and research and trying to use the Museum of Conspiracy, mainly because I just wanted people to understand that even, you know, these conspiracy theories can be educational and credible. And ultimately, I guess it was a failure. So the lawyer basically said that it's kind of too hard. We tried talking to several different departments in New York, the education commissioner basically turned down our request. So had to change it to the Conspiracy Center. And I've been in the works of basically changing everything over, kind of rebranding. I'm working right now, so I've kind of put up a temporary website and things like that, but working with a graphic designer to get that all upgraded. And then, yeah, like you had mentioned this big event that I was planning, but unfortunately, I actually just decided to cancel it. And one of the reasons is actually, I don't think Barbara is on the call here, but I had a conversation with her about a week and a half ago. I was planning a large conference in New York City where I was wanting to market the museum, I guess, build some awareness that this thing was coming. And I was working on getting one miniature exhibit created so that people could see what this concept is. And for those that weren't on the call, the concept basically is to have an objective, educational, and interactive museum in New York City, where people can come in, learn about the official, quote unquote, official stories, and then basically be put into some sort of interactive experience. So it would depend upon which conspiracy theory it is, but I guess the best example, JFK. I'm working on getting a virtual reality JFK experience where people can go and immerse themselves and kind of experience what it was like during JFK's assassination, look up particular oddities of that day, take the headset off, hopefully people that had no clue that there were, you know, all of these weird things and all of the reasons why people believe that it was a conspiracy theory, they can then explore with text on tablets, on the walls, on screens. And so the main point of the museum isn't necessarily to push, you know, my conspiracy theories or our conspiracy theories down people's throats, but instead to just kind of get people to raise questions, because I think it'll help bring more people into the community, which I think is a pretty integral part of all of our success. I think it's important to bring those casual people that have been afraid to, like you were just discussing, go to Congress office, congressmen's offices and drop off packets, make calls. So I think the more and more people that we kind of allow to come in, the better. And the reason in which I brought up the reason I'm on the call was initially because of this big conference. But I was advised because some of the people that I was trying to have speak were, I guess, maybes. They were not very committed, and those that did commit, I guess, were somewhat controversial, to the point where I just didn't want to take away from the point, the message of the museum, the goal of the museum. And so I've instead actually shifted gears, and I just had a meeting today where I'm working on doing a small pop-up museum next September. So I'm basically doing exactly what I want to do on a large scale, but I'm going to do it on a smaller scale. And the two exhibits that I'm going to include at the offset are JFK and 9/11. So one of the reasons I'm on here is, yeah, to tell you guys about that, how I'll be planning and, updating you guys as I go along, but would love any sort of advice, help that you guys would like to give. And then I actually will be starting in January and February trying to reach out to investors. So if there's anybody that you know that may be interested in being a part of this, I'm putting in $100,000 of my own money and looking to try to raise $100,000 elsewhere to try to fund this small miniature pop-up, which hopefully will then turn into a more permanent location. And one of the biggest things, and I guess the most important thing, is just to make sure that the material that goes into the museum is well vetted. It is kind of not, I don't want to say agreed upon, because one thing I've learned is that not everybody agrees on everything, but to the point where people aren't upset, because it has to be for everybody. I want people to go. I want each and every one of you to be able to go to this if you're in the New York area and say, this has some really awesome points in here. This is what I believe. I don't necessarily believe this, but this part here is so amazing. I'm glad people are able to see and learn about this. So I welcome any sort of criticism or advice that anybody on here has. If you have questions, want to talk with me, you know, elsewhere, I really am looking for all the help that I can. So please don't hold back. I think honestly, that's a good overview. I think it's best probably just to open up if anybody has any questions.
Okay, well, we're still in question and answer mode, so that's a tip-off to those of you with questions or comments, *6, and we'll put you in the queue. And Michael Cohen is already there. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, this is awesome. I love the idea. And thank you so much for ponying up so much money and trying to raise so much more. Anything that I have to say about, like, agreement, you know, people get all caught up in the details of what really happened, but I think it's very easy to avoid all that infighting and just to, you know, be able to say that the official story stinks, you know, that it can't be right, and that applies all over the place. And so that is a point of agreement that amongst all the varying, you know, details of any given conspiracy, you can probably get by with that one. It's like, something's really wrong here, because what they're telling us is obviously not true, given all the rest of this, whatever of it you choose to accept. And I also encourage you to include the latest big thing to happen, which was Vegas, the Vegas shooting. Mm-hmm. If anybody's not up on that, it's... Listen to the police scanner, you know, look at the tweets and the Instagrams and the Facebook postings, all the thousands of people that were there on the strip that night. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks. I couldn't have said it better myself in regards to the infighting. I think that's kind of the point of what I'm doing is I think the biggest point here is that we all need to focus on the official story is crap. And whether we all agree or disagree, it's important that people understand that there are more credible, more believable alternatives out there. So thanks so much for that. And then, yeah, in regards to the Vegas thing, I'm actually one of the things I'm hoping to include is a timeline of various other conspiracy theories where people can click on, you know, I don't know if you've been to any museums lately, but they have these large, impressive, multi-user touch tables where you can click and explore further, or 3, 4, 5 people can be in at the same time. And I think that would be one of the things I definitely would consider putting on this table, where people can see and explore further and Yeah, definitely something to consider when we expand into a more permanent, larger location. So thanks.
Yeah,
okay.
John, I'm trying to go into Q&A, and I can't get it to work. So at the end, just I'd like to say something.
Hello. It said I should ask a question. Am I on? This is Nita.
Is that Nita? Okay.
Yeah. This is, my name is Nita Renfrew. Hi. And I live in New York. And, I'd certainly like to meet with you. I might be able to be of assistance to you. I've worked in nonprofit exhibitions. I've been a reporter. I know I have quite a lot of insights into the JFK assassination and 9/11. And how do I get in touch with you?
The best way to get in touch would be R Hess. That's R H E S S as in Samantha at museumofconspiracy.com.
The Museum of Conspiracy?
Just Museum of Conspiracy.
Conspiracy.com. So that is one word.
Yes, museumofconspiracy.com, one word.
And it's R, that's R-H-E-S-S.
Correct.
Okay, and my name is Nita.
Nita.
My name is
Ryan Hess.
Ryan, okay. Okay, Ryan, I'll send you an email.
Yeah, I look forward to it. I'd love to meet with you.
Is there an email there, or?
Say that one more time.
Do you have an email?
The best email would be rhess@museumofconspiracy.com.
Okay, that is okay. It's not a website.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's kind of confusing as Cheryl, kind of touched on. I'm changing the name from Museum of Conspiracy to the Conspiracy Center.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's been somewhat of a disaster, and I apologize.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll get in touch with you, and then we can talk because I may be some assistance. Okay.
Sounds great.
Okay, and Wayne Costi. Wayne Costi.
Yes, sorry, I was on mute also. Ryan, thanks. That's really informative, like it was last summer when we talked. But could you explain a little more about what the pop-up museum concept would be? I was really intrigued by the smaller scale, but how did you actually envision this to work? Thanks. Over.
Yeah, thanks. So in my initial plans, I've been basically a lot of what I've been doing for the last year and a half is planning, trying to come up with strategy. How in the world am I going to raise the amount of money that I think I need? And my initial budget actually had about $4.5 million being needed in order to open the museum. And so what this was like a 15,000 square foot space where there would be 4 or 5 exhibits and multiple rooms. And so it was a much larger, much more intricate and much more permanent installation. And if anybody that has worked in museums or this sort of industry, there's a lot of, I guess, hand dipping in the pot. For instance, exhibit designers charge a percentage in order to just simply design which exhibit should go here, what should this idea be. That's running in the couple hundred thousand. And so what I've basically been doing is as a part of planning the conference, I connected with quite an impressive startup that's working in virtual reality, augmented reality, and interactive touch screens. So they're really good with creating these immersive experiences, and they're at a much cheaper cost. So I'm not going to have the typical museum allure of floor-to-ceiling walls that have, graphic panels and beautiful artwork and text on them. But instead, I'm going to have these very state-of-the-art interactive exhibits with maybe tablets that supplement them and a couple graphic panels that are just freestanding on the side. And the size of the space that I would be doing it in is about 3,000 to 4,000 square feet. And so the costs are much lower, the overhead's much lower, and then that would allow me to just kind of test this concept. If people are interested, do people want to go to this type of thing to learn about it, as opposed to waiting until I can get in front of the right investors to raise $4 to $5 million. And so, yeah, I guess the easiest way just is to kind of, I'm basically scaling and putting the focus on the exhibit interactiveness themselves, the raising of the question, and having text and information on tablets, as opposed to paying thousands and thousands of dollars to exhibit designers and graphic panels. That's the plan.
So were you talking about also having the series of goggles that I've seen where you can have a 3D experience and look around, see the book depository, for example, look over at the grassy knoll, those kinds of things?
Yeah, so for the JFK, that, so what it would be is they actually sent me a proposal to have an Elm Street experience, so you can walk along the street, walk along, you know, the grassy knoll and explore, and there'll be kind of directions where people can, what the point of it is really just to look over here, okay, what is there something strange over here, and then people would be able to then go back and explore the depository and other aspects of that particular day, to the point where people are immersed. They've never experienced, they've seen, you know, a 10-second, I think everybody's seen, you know, the 10-second clip of the actual assassination, but do they know what the layout of the plaza is? Do they know where this building is, and where was this person? How does this possibly work? So that would be done in the virtual reality world, and take that off to then have a supplemental digital app on iPads, touch televisions, and graphic panels. And then for 9/11, I haven't had that. I wish they sent me a proposal, but we're talking about something in the augmented reality space, which would be having a model of the Trade Center, and then basically have tablets that can that basically on the tablets there would be this I don't know how, it's hard to explain if nobody knows what AR is, but basically you hold up the tablet and it scans the real world, physical world, and it has a player, so it would have potentially planes, or it can have this building go down in a controlled demolition, and it could show that on the tablet using the actual space that's there. So it's somewhat of an interactive technological way to look at something, to get people's eye and say, oh, wow, I didn't realize that it went down in this manner. Did you? Okay, let's go explore more. Why is this possible? Why aren't there more studies? How do we reopen, you know, another investigation? So yeah, there's other things. There's other elements to it rather than just text. I hope that answers your question.
Well, I'm very intrigued and look forward to finding out some more. Thanks.
Yeah, thank you.
Okay, well...
Ken, I'd like to just ask a question. I'm not up for some reason. I couldn't get in the queue.
Yeah, I do too, Kirk. So I was going to go ahead first and then let you close.
Oh, okay, go ahead. Yep.
That's okay. Okay. Yep. Let's see. Ryan, how is it that you're not able... on your own, for whatever reason, call something a museum? I don't quite understand how the state can veto right to do that. Can you get into the details of that a little bit?
Yeah, so basically how the state of New York, so I formed the company in Delaware and had no issues there, but unfortunately in the state of New York there's about 72 words that you have to get prior consent. And the rationale behind it is they don't want some unvetted group of individuals forming, let's say, a school and calling themselves the prestigious school of scholars. And then they're not actually, you know, teaching accredited curriculum or, you know, the actual state's curriculum or what they want to be taught.
Sure.
And the same thing. Yeah.
But why museum, though?
So I think, yeah, that's a there's actually even funnier words than that. I couldn't tell you.
I couldn't tell you. They just said that in order to be a museum, you have to hold collections and you have to be what's weird because you don't even have to be a nonprofit. There's even an example of those that live in New York. There's the Museum of Sex, which was largely funded by Bill Maher. But they just apparently went ahead. They went ahead without getting consent. And we kind of bugged the department saying, well, there's already a museum that's a for-profit museum that's using Museum of Sex at the museum in their name. And their response basically was, well, but you're not supposed to. So technically I could have, it was the lawyer's advice. So technically I could have, but it wasn't worth any possible ramifications, especially considering the nature of the content.
Okay. I understand.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah. So Ryan, I just wanted to know, do you have a location already picked out for the September opening of these pop-up museums?
No, I do not. So what I've done is I've put it together. I've been constantly updating a list of places like storefront.com. There's a large market in New York where they have short-term rentals. So places that are looking for long-term leases, they have short-term rentals and you pay a daily, weekly, or monthly rate. And so I've basically been curating that, the updated list of spaces that are potentially available. I've even had a PR person that's been working with me call, a communications person call and help facilitate, I guess, the relationship. And they know the nature of it because that's one of my biggest concerns. I don't know if that's where you're going with this, but they basically said that they have very little concern that I won't be able to rent a space because they've never seen it. They've seen pornographic videos trying to be shot in their spaces, and they think that would be less suitable than a conspiracy museum. So they just don't see the, you know, it's a possibility.
That's a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, and then just one last question. Oh, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying. So I'm hoping that my fingers are crossed that that's not a problem. So wish me luck.
Okay. And then I wanted to, are you planning in the museum to have like a bookstore with the books available and videos of the alternative views? Or?
Yes. So that is one thing. I just actually had a conversation today on whether or not it's logical to have some sort of small gift shop, if you will. Mm-hmm. And that's something that if somebody would be interested in, I think we could work out something really great because it's just not making sense for me to spend so much time and energy to focus on that. But I really would love to have something like that where there's some great selection of books and other materials that people could purchase. I don't know if that's necessarily doable unless I get some assistance. So I'm open to advice.
Okay. Yeah, I actually just opened a small used bookstore and can so I'll talk to you more about that because I
okay,
offline,
yeah, awesome.
Offline.
Please do.
Yeah,
please do.
Okay.
Sounds great.
Okay. Any other questions for Ryan? Oh, I guess not.
No.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ryan. Really appreciate the update.
Yeah, thank you
and
guys for having
doing.
Me.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us, Ryan. Okay, well, that brings us to our next agenda item, which is those of you who are regulars on the call will remember that a few months ago, Craig introduced us to the issue of Google's censorship, not just Google, but Facebook and some other of the more quasi-monopolistic social media are beginning to bring down the hammer on alternative thinking. In their midst, and he did a great job of acquainting us with the issue, and tonight Wayne Costi is going to follow up with an update. Wayne, go ahead. Oh, might help if I unmute you, huh, mate? Okay, let's see if we can find you here. Let's see here.
I got him.
Hi, thanks. Ken, I don't have an awful lot here. I thought there might be more of a discussion. But what I wanted to do was just, thank Craig for raising the topic. One of the things that we did was put together an article for the 9/11 TAP website. We republished an article that was published by the World Socialist website called Google Intensifies Censorship of Left-Wing Websites. It basically goes through their experience with parallels what Craig and Jim Hufford had said, and I think some others, where their number of hits on their pages were dramatically changed as a result of all of a sudden, and it appeared to be because of the Google search engine algorithms. So we put an article up on that, and I've also been following the issue a little bit. And one of the, again, the World Socialist website, WSWS.org, has a number of articles related to this. And the most recent one is, actually it's about a month ago now, called Google's Eric Schmidt Admits Political Censorship of Search Results. And it's, I'll just go through the first couple of paragraphs here. It says, Eric Schmidt, the executive chairman of Google's parent company, Alphabet, confirmed this weekend that the world's largest internet company is in close coordination with the state, manipulating search engine results to censor sites critical of the U.S. government. Responding to a question about the manipulation of information on the internet during an appearance at the Halifax International Security Forum, Schmidt announced that Google is working on algorithms that will de-rank Russian-based news website RT and Sputnik from its Google News services, effectively blocking users' access to either site. Schmidt's remarks at the gathering of military and national security officials confirm the World Socialist website's charges that Google has been deliberately altering its search algorithms and taking other steps to prevent people from accessing certain information and specific websites through its search engines. The WSWS has itself been a principal target of those efforts. So that's all I wanted to read on that. And then, of course, we have the net neutrality discussions in which the way that we're going to be getting information is going to be dramatically changing, so I understand. It's a little unclear to me just how it's going to change, but we know that that's happening. And then there was the most recent discussion about Google hiring 10,000 censors or people to go through YouTube videos and using some criteria, which I don't think they've explained, eliminate some of these videos that they would find to be offensive. And I thought they actually had algorithms that could go through and find not only copyrighted material that is unlicensed, but also search the audio tracks for other types of information. But anyway, what I'd like to do is kind of open it up for some kind of discussion about where do we go from here as a movement when one of our most hoped-for ways of reaching people through the internet is now being so, heavily scrutinized and censored. So that's kind of where I'd like to leave it now and have some comments about where do we go from here.
Okay.
From everyone else here. Thanks.
While we're waiting for folks to star six, if they want to participate in the discussion, I'd like to ask you, Wayne, if you've made any effort to find out whether or not your TAP webpage on the subject is being monitored or censored by Google in any way. Have you tried to see how it shows up on Google search engine?
No, actually, I don't think I've tried to do that. It's a good test. I'm not prepared to do it right now in real time. But that would be a really good test to see how it shows up.
Okay. Well, if anybody would like to make a comment on this question of the censorship that we've all witnessed,
I have a comment on it. I was just thinking about it's not just on the internet. you know, I've lost one of my radio programs being aired at Wesleyan University due to student censorship, ironically enough. And also in the other radio station where I'm at, University of Hartford, I'm told I can't mention Israel. So there's censorship going on. And then I know other radio stations in Connecticut who have lost a lot of their alternative programming. So I think there's a concerted effort, you know, across the board, not just on the Internet. So I just wanted to throw that out.
Yeah, well, while we're waiting for people to get in the queue, I'll mention some good news that should have been mentioned last week, but we overlooked it. But our good friend Tony Hall, who most of you know was censored at his University of Lethbridge, has been reinstated pending an in-house type of review of his case. So that's really good news. He's back on the payroll. He's back teaching again. And hopefully he will be able to prevail when they do finally do their regular review using faculty and peer review of the charges against him. So that's all really good news.
So Ken, this is you know, I have done a search, and I did I put the title of the article in, which is Google mm-hmm. Intensifies Censorship of Left-Wing Websites, and I got a lot of them. When I put in the first one was the World Socialist Website mm-hmm. .org. This time when I added the word the phrase 9/11, mm-hmm. the World Socialist Website was first, and the 9/11 tap was second. So.
And this is on Google's website, Google search engine, right?
That's right, Google search engine.
Okay.
So it came through as long as I put those two things together. So,
mm-hmm.
so okay. it's not completely censored, which now mm-hmm. makes me feel better. Oh, but
yeah.
I'm still really apprehensive about how everything's going to change sure. in the next couple of months. Over.
Okay. Okay, well, it looks like Michael Cook has a comment, so let's go to Michael. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, yeah, thanks. I think we're all waiting with bated breath to see what happens with the net neutrality. I guess, you know, I've always wondered how much good we're doing with the Internet actions. It's been going on for so many years, and every once in a while there'll be this, like, assault. A whole bunch of us were getting porn posted on our Facebook page and things like that. Different weirdness type things that happen. Sometimes I get on and I can't comment. Everything's marked as spam and stuff like that. It sends a message to me that, you know, this is probably having some kind of good effect, and for sure they don't like it or they wouldn't be doing this. And boy, I'm just hopeful that... you know, the net neutrality thing doesn't go real far. And if it does, then, you know, we'll have to talk about, you know, doing something, some kind of serious protest, hell-raising to reverse it. And it's already, by the way, being opposed strenuously in different places around the country. I think Washington, Vermont, California, other left, liberal-leaning areas are challenging it in court, you know, the state prosecutor or whatever, governors and so forth standing up against it. So I'm hopeful that it won't go anywhere. Thank you.
Oh, good. That's a hopeful comment. All right. Anybody else care to make – go ahead, Cheryl.
Yeah, I just wanted to make another comment, and Wayne or anyone who wants to respond, great. It looks like Congress called Google and Facebook and the people into Congress and kind of was like forcing them almost to do the censorship, and at least that was my understanding of what they were doing, asking them to, you know, clamp down on certain sites and stuff, and, you know, mostly like related to terrorism or something, but, you know, we know that what that really means. So, I'm just wondering if there's any way that we should be going after Congress for trying to sort of force these organizations into that.
Well Cheryl, if you could provide me with a little more detail about what where you've heard this.
Yeah, they had a congressional hearing. They had a congressional hearing. You can, I'll find it on YouTube and send it to you because you can hear them.
That would be useful.
Telling these people, the heads of these companies, to do more censorship, basically. So, okay, I'll find it.
Great, thanks.
Mm-hmm. All right, does anyone else wish to participate in this dialogue? Star 6 if you'd like to be in the queue. Otherwise, we'll move on. Well, Wayne, thanks for that update, and let's keep this on our back burner. If anybody has any more news on it, be sure to let us know, and we'll schedule another update, because this is an issue that I think concerns us all pretty deeply, and certainly has everything to do with the ability of our movement to succeed. So let's move forward then. And our last item on the agenda tonight, Gerald, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right, is Gerald Pichenik. Let me get you on off the mute here so you can tell me if I'm saying it right or not.
That's fine. That's fine.
Okay. Gerald wants to give us a brief update on the nefarious background of Robert Mueller, the current special counsel. And as some of us you may remember, but he's going to refresh our memory of his past involvement with the FBI during the 9/11 issue. So go ahead, Gerald, and let us know what we need to know about Robert Mueller.
Absolutely. And thanks very much for this very timely discussion. You can't turn on to anything without hearing about Mueller and conspiracies and FBI agents saying the Trumps are douchebags and Hillary Clinton should win $100 million to $0, you know. Nice FBI agents. So what I'm going through in 5 minutes or less, which I promised Ken, is a document which all of you can have copies of. It's titled, Robert Mueller is an Amoral Legal Assassin. He will do his job if you let him. It's 32 pages. It consists of frame up, cover up, and set up. Three sections. The frame up was the frame up of Lyndon LaRouche, Lyndon LaRouche, presidential candidate, political activist, now 95 years young and still kicking hard. Cover up was the cover up of 9/11, as Ken alluded to, and the setup is the setup ongoing right now, today, as we speak, of President Trump. So there's three sections in this report covering the frame-up of LaRouche, the cover-up of 9/11, and the setup of President Trump. For the purpose of this call, I'm only going to focus on the second section, the cover-up of 9/11, and mention four things. And then I am going to mention one other event coming up in New York City on the question of 9/11 and so forth. But the four things I want to mention from the second section, and most of you probably know all this, but as Ken said, maybe our memories need to be refreshed on it. The first thing I'm going to mention is the fact that Senator, no less a person than Senator Bob Graham from Florida, who was the co-chairman of the Joint Congressional Inquiry into 9/11, said the FBI under Robert Mueller, now Robert Mueller was the head of the FBI for 10 years, from 2001 to 2010, starting right before 9/11, beginning of September. Bob Graham said the FBI under Mueller engaged in aggressive deception of the American people, in which they rewrote the narrative regarding the 9/11 attacks. Graham, in 2016 at the National Press Club, August 31st, said the FBI actually detained him and warned him against continuing attempts to uncover the truth about 9/11. So Mueller personally intervened and prevented Graham's committee from interviewing FBI people who directly knew about Saudi hijackers, for example, in the San Diego case. So, and it turns out the famous 28 pages were classified by none other than Robert Mueller himself. He was the one who classified the 28 pages, which was finally released in 2016. So that's one case of Mueller, 9/11. The case that people may have forgotten about was right after 9/11, was the famous anthrax cases, A-N-T-H-R-A-X, anthrax. Letters were sent killing five people. Mueller harassed a guy named Dr. Hatfield. Hatfield was totally innocent. Mueller harassed the hell out of this guy, thrown out of the government. He eventually won a $5.8 million judgment against the FBI. So Mueller is really up to his neck in terms of surveillance, detentions from the 9/11 period. And in the case of the so-called Islamic terrorists, Mueller, during the period he was the head of the FBI from 2001 to 2010, as I mentioned, a research which came out in a book called The Terror Factory, Inside the FBI's Manufactured War on Terrorism by Trevor Aronson, who studied every case of terrorism, read the documents, is that the FBI, in almost every single domestic terror plot during his tenure, you know, something like, I think it was 85 or 90%, somewhere in that range, in every single of those cases, the FBI either cooked up, assisted, and was involved in the actual terrorism. And so this guy's got a record, you know, a mile long. So you got 9/11 cover-up, you got the anthrax case, you got terrorism, and the fourth case I'll mention is the case of our collaborators. You guys may know Ray McGovern and Bill Binney from the Veteran Intelligence Professionals for Sanity, who did blow the whistle on the Iraq War. They blew the whistle on the Russia, hacked the DNC. Binney, who worked at NSA, was involved in setting up a system which was called Thin Thread, which could actually track the 9/11 terrorists while preserving the Constitution. Binney was run out of the NSA by General Michael Hayden, and the NSA used a system which violated, you know, everyone's rights, a surveillance system, which Binney's system would not violate people's rights. And because Binney and others kept speaking up about this, and you can watch the movie The Good American by Oliver Stone, Binney, for his trouble, was raided and harassed by none other than Robert Mueller, and a gun was stuck to his head from these guys. So Mueller's involvement in 9/11, in harassing Binney, in the cover-up, is very deep. And I just wanted to mention in closing that Binney and McGovern will probably be speaking right around January 6th, that is a week from Saturday, in New York City, in conjunction with an event at the what's called the Teardrop Memorial for 9/11, which is in Bayonne, New Jersey, Saturday, January 6th at 10 a.m., and then a concert and reception we're sponsoring at 2 o'clock at the Good Shepherd Faith Presbyterian Church in New York City. And either that evening or the evening before, they're going to discuss this in depth, their findings that this whole Russia hacked the DNC, that Mueller's in charge of investigating, is a big bunch of bullshit and a complete setup. of which is no evidence. So that's my 5 minutes. You got it.
Okay. So we have a little time left. If anybody wishes to make a comment or ask a question of Gerald regarding his presentation, you're free to do so. Star 6, if you want to ask a question or make a comment.
Ken?
Yes.
Cheryl, yeah, I just wanted to ask, Gerald, could you send out information about the event you just mentioned to the listserv?
Absolutely.
Gerald, are you on the listserv? Are you on our listserv?
I got on the list, I think, after the last call, yes.
Okay, good.
I'm not on the listserv. I'm on the list. But if I send it to you, can you forward it out, Ken or Greg?
Well, why don't you send it to Cheryl since she's interested and she can forward it to the rest of us.
Okay. All right, Cheryl, then I need an email to send it to you.
Sure.
Okay. So it's C-H-E-R.
Okay.
C-U-R-T.
Okay.
@AOL.com.
Okay, just repeating one, C-H-E-R-C-U-R-T @AOL.com.
Correct.
You got it.
Thank you.
All right. Should be an interesting event. There'll be music and discussion and certainly timely.
Well, you must have done a good job of refreshing us, Gerald, because no one has any questions, so they all understood, apparently, what you were letting us know about.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Yeah. I suspected you guys are real troopers and, you know, you're not doing this any other reason than actual love of the nation and love of the future and willing to put your neck on the line to fight for truth. And that is certainly a commendable quality as
well,
a human being.
Thank you for keeping your presentation tailored to the interest of the people on this call. I appreciate you very much, and you're welcome back and whenever you have anything else to update us on.
Sure.
For the future. Okay. With that said, then I guess we're ready for announcements this evening. Does anyone have an announcement? Well, I guess we should unmute everybody to give everybody a chance to make an announcement. So let's get out of question and answer mode here.
Yeah.
So, does anybody wish to make an announcement of any sort to share with the rest of us?
Yes, Craig.
Craig, go ahead, Craig.
Okay, yeah, just two quick related things. One is that there's a new article by David Chandler where he sort of attacks CIT and claims that based on a single interview that he looks at, that their entire body of work is invalid. And I'm actually working on a response to this for my blog, Truth and Shadows, which I hope to have. I hope to have the response posted within, well, perhaps even tomorrow. Obviously, I take great exception to this latest article. The other thing I wanted to update people on, which was what I talked about on the call last month, which was the list that I had started, No 757 Hit the Pentagon on 9/11 list. That now has it was published on the 11th of December, and we now have 710 names on the list. So I just wanted, it's continuing to grow. You know, it grew a lot. Obviously, a lot of people came on at the beginning, and it's so the growth rate is not the same now as it was a couple of weeks ago, but it's still kind of, I think, steadily going up. So I just wanted to update everybody on that. So that's all I have.
Very good. Thank you, Craig. Anybody else with an announcement or a quick update?
So this is Wayne.
Wayne, go ahead.
Yeah, so thanks, Craig, for reminding me. I should mention this also. I gave a presentation a couple of months ago about the plane approach, and Craig commented that my flight approach was in error, and he spoke quite forcefully about that. And I said that I would be replying on the January teleconference, which is, according to the rules, the soonest I could present something related to the Pentagon. So I'll be requesting time at the next teleconference in January to review the flight path to bring in the radar, show how all the radar, the light poles, the CIT witnesses, other witnesses are all aligned with the path that I threw that I drew, give or take a few feet. So that's all.
Okay. So Wayne is going to request time for the next teleconference. Anything else? Okay. Well, then I guess that's it for this week. For this month, I should say, and everybody have a happy new year, and we'll see you the last Wednesday of January for the next talk conference.
Yeah, thanks everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Ken.
Yeah, thanks all.
Ken.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just the two of us. That was a pretty good. Do you think that went okay?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I think that's the kind of teleconference that I'd like to have more of, frankly. You know,
yeah,
where there's
informative.
There's nothing.
You know.
Yeah, informative. You know, people stick to their subject. There's no wandering. There's no need to curtail people's comments and stuff. We have plenty of time for everything,
yeah.
And everything goes smoothly. Yeah, it was refreshing.
Don't get too used to that. I have a feeling next month won't be that.
No, I'm sure we're not done with the fisticuffs, but you know, it was fun while it lasted.
Yeah, it was nice to end the year that way, right? And
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's great. Well, all right. Well, I thought that was good myself, and thanks for organizing that. I thought it was a well planned out there, and yeah, I got to go now. We're having like. It's going to be like 70 below zero or 7 below zero tonight or something.
Oh, my gosh.
And I have a dead battery, so I have to go out now in this freezing weather. And
yeah, you better deal with that real quick.
So anyway, but yeah, so for next month, though, all we have is Wayne, or do we have anyone else?
As far as I know, I don't know of anything else in the works. So, yeah, anything you can think of. Craig did say that he thought if we had Wayne on this time, that we, or not Wayne, Andy, that we might be able to get Bob McElvain for the next month. So we'll try to see what can be done with that. I'll kind of prompt him to pursue it because he's suing it through A9 of Truth.
Right. And, you know, Frank Tolupko, who is a good friend of Bob's, and he's here in the Northeast, and I'm a good friend of Frank's. And
mm-hmm.
So I can have Frank reach out to him.
Oh, please. Yeah. Let him know that we're trying to get him scheduled for the next teleconference and ask him if he would be so kind to let us know that he can make it. Let him know what the time is.
We want him to talk
is.
About the Bobby McElvain Act. So
of course. Of course. Yeah.
Okay. Great. All right. Let me see if I can do that. And then we'll need one other person, right, at least. So.
Oh, yeah.
I'll reach out to Michelle Chesedowski.
We're sort of running out of empty at the moment, but, you know, things do tend to work toward fulfillment for the month.
Yeah, in the end, it always works out for somehow. So,
yeah.
Are we recorded still? We're being recorded. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, we are. One moment.